I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And I'm like, no, dude, he's not an a-hole. He just signed everything for 20 minutes. He's at work. His quote-unquote boss told him to get into the clubhouse. But in those kids' mind, oh, he ran right by us, and he did. I'm just trying to give a little bit of perspective, trying to get the athletes back, whether, in this case, he deserved it or not. All right, let's go to Lucky, who's right here in town. What's up, Luck?
What's going on, my man? How you doing?
What's up?
Hey, man, I just wanted to talk about, I had a memory of the Oracle, man. I took my girl, who's now my wife, man. We went to go see, I think it was the Warriors versus, I think it was like Charlotte, if I'm not mistaken, a couple years back, about 2 or 3 years back. And I also want to talk about my last memory, I guess. Baby, my dad took me to the Warrior game when they were playing downtown San Francisco. So I'm kind of, it's kind of a bittersweet for me because I'm happy to see him come home, but I'm kind of sad that they're leaving the Coliseum.
No doubt about it. Thank you, Lucky. I appreciate it. And the lines are open, 888-957-9570. If the Warriors were moving to Las Vegas, I would be full of rage and I would be breaking everything in this studio right now, which probably wouldn't go over well with my boss. But it's when, you know, it's just people, because, you know, like when I was here with Jim Cozenmore yesterday, he's like, what's the big deal? They're only going 8 miles away. And I understand that perspective from Cozy. I really do. And I think a lot of people feel that way. It's just, I think when you're an Oakland guy, you just hate to see the team leave. And I think about all the workers in East Oakland that go to the game, and whether they walk, take a bike, ride AC Transit, what it is a big deal getting all the way over there to Pier 89 or whatever it is. It is a big deal. But then again, you know, it's progress for the team. The team's going to have more cash, and they built the stadium. They spent $1 billion+ on their own. They've gone over into the luxury tax violations to make sure they win. And all any fan can ask is to have your team have an ownership group that puts winning first. And that's not always been the case with certain team of mine, that they put winning maybe ninth on the list of priorities. So you can either embrace it or you can curse it. And there's nothing you can do now. It's beyond all of our control. So I think the perspective of having one team go to LA and now going to Vegas, this one I can still see. So I'm just going to go ahead and embrace it at this point. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Rick Tittle with you for another 3 hours. We'll talk a little baseball with Jessica Kleinschmidt in about 20 minutes. So I still have tons and tons of memories, but let me tell you one that really sticks out about the Coliseum Arena, or as it's called now, Oracle. And we're going to have to change that in a couple days. As soon as the playoffs get over, we're going to have to call the Giants. Well, we already do call the Giants, but it's going to take, what, maybe 3 years of transition to start really thinking of that place. Maybe we will never think of China Basin as Oracle. I don't know if I ever will. But in 1981, 16 years old, I played tennis in high school. Tennis had a lot of panache back then. It's not like now where it's like, eh. With Borg and McEnroe, it was really cool. And you probably say, tennis was never cool. No, no, no. Tennis was really cool. And they had this Avon tennis tournament, which turned into Virginia Slims. If you can believe that, a cigarette company was the sponsor. Not very PC back then. But Avon makeup. There used to be people who would sell things door to door, like Avon, the Fuller Brush Man. Remember him? The Fuller Brush Man. He would come to your door and sell combs. That makes me sound like I'm 100. I do remember when Oklahoma wanted statehood. I thought, how dare you?
All you millennials.
Yeah. So anyway, the Avon tournament, I had this woman knew that I played tennis in high school I was also the quarterback. I just want to let everybody know. Anyway, so she goes, they need a gopher. There's this brand new cable network called the USA Network, and they're going to be broadcasting it, and they need a gopher for the production truck. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'll do it. And I remember telling my baseball coach, I need a few days off. And it was pretty less than tacit what I was doing. And he almost kicked me off the team. And he would have had every right to do it. But I went to the Coliseum every day after school and worked in this tennis tournament. And I was in the players' lounge and everything. But also, the USA Broadcast Network was doing the games. And it was Mary Carrillo, who's a fantastic, sweet woman. And there was a guy named Al Troutwig who went on to do the Olympics. And he's still working to this day. And I have no qualms telling you what a jackass that guy was and how he treated me as a 16-year-old. I also learned that day early on that I didn't want to work in a truck with all the crazy things going on the PL and everything else. But I would just, it was basically gopher. Go for this, go for that, bring that guy a flashlight, bring that lady a headset. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's Johnny on the spot, whatever you need, whatever you need. And it was during a match. And a guy said, Al wants a Coke. And I go, okay, what do you want me to do? And so the producer gave me a $5 bill. He goes, just buy him a Coke at a concession stand and just take it up to him. And it was already a little bit intimidating because I heard him dress down a few other people. So he's at this card table, and they're way high up at the Coliseum Arena. It's 1981 now, 16 years old. They're on the air. And so I walk up very quietly, and I put – this, you know, paper cup full of Coke that I got at the concession stand just a little bit off to his right where he's sitting. And I start to walk away, and he grabbed my arm really hard, and he pulled his mic away from his headset, and he goes, you stupid ass, if this spills, we're all going to get electrocuted. Now, at 16 years old, I didn't respond. I just went, okay. Now, as an adult, you wouldn't put up with that type of treatment. And I thought, God, what a, you know, he asks for a Coke, I bring him a Coke, and then he does that. So, yeah, I got no love for Al Troutwig, and I'll tell that story on the air every day because total jerk, total complete jerk. But there's a little memory for you working at the Coliseum and knowing the inside outs of the arena, and that was kind of cool going underneath and seeing where they kept people when they were, quote, unquote, arrested. That's when the Coliseum security, which was mostly OPD, and the OPD, for some reason, they used to have these, like, elastic saran wrap, almost like, you know, these shower, what are those things called that you put shower caps? And they'd have them over the top of their police hat, and they would wear them when it was 100 degrees. It was almost like, you know, your grandma in Florida's couch with the plastic over it. But going inside, seeing all the ins and outs of how things get put on. There was a manual scoreboard, which I got to work. Got to meet a lot of tennis players, not just the Chris Everett and Martina Navratilovas, but the Leslie Allens and the Carling Bassetts and the Bettina Bungies and some of those great players at that time. So that was, I mean, it was cool. I was basically an employee at the Coliseum Arena. I remember doing Ace Fan Fest there a few times back when Lou Wolf, of course, for a while was like, we don't want Fan Fest. We don't want fans to get excited. And they had it in the arena, at least half of it. But I was there for the We Believe game, that game when the eight knocked out the one and the confetti coming down. And I remember Mark Cuban shaking, he was very magnanimous. Mark Cuban was shaking hands with Warriors people. He was shaking hands with the fans, basically like, hey, you kicked our butts, you know, and the eight never beats the one except this time, and full credit to you. I thought, you know, Mark was kind of a stand-up guy that day. I was in the stands. My brother had a ticket, and he was wearing his J. Rich jersey. That was an incredible moment that I'll never forget. I was at the 73 win game when they were going to break the record. Now that one I got in with my credential, but I remember that night that I had to get emergency root canal. I had this like horrible nerve, and I was just in mortal pain, and my mouth was on fire because I had this nerve damage or whatever, and I had root canal the next day, emergency. But I just remember thinking, wow, 73 wins. Now, then again, move ahead about, 4 or 5 weeks to that game seven, and that is the worst feeling I have ever had at any of my home arenas in my life. I do remember walking out of Super Bowl 37 in San Diego, but that toilet bowl was not my home stadium. Just the unbelievable nature, the Cleveland Riders who were running down, I think I was sitting next to Damon, actually, and Bruce McGowan. We were all in just utter shock that it happened. How could it happen? How could the team that won 73 games and up 3-1? And you can talk all you want about Draymond. Draymond played in Game 6. Draymond played in Game 7. And you think about the little things. Steph's behind-the-back pass to E-40. You know, the Festus Ezeli stupid foul. You know, Kyrie's big shot. It was, and I remember the Cleveland Riders, who had a real gallows humor. That was right when that documentary Believe Land came out. And I watched it. And then I went to Adam Silver's address. And all those guys were there. And I was sitting in the same row. Like, I just watched you guys on the 30 for 30. And they're like, oh, what'd you think? Like, it was pretty cool. But they're like, yeah, we know we're done. We know we're losing. It's, and, you know, their last championship, what was it, 1964, Jim Brown and the Browns. You had to go back to black and white film for that. And I had just such a horrible pit in my stomach that I knew that for the rest of my life that the number 73 for the Warriors would haunt me. For the A's, it's nice. They won a championship. But I could never wear anything that said 73. And there were a lot of people, like it was Greg, said, no, 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 you still have to appreciate the 73 wins. And I can't. I'm too shallow. I can't. It makes it worse to think you're the greatest team in the history of the regular season. So I was at that game, and it was a horrible feeling. And then I remember leaving. Someone fell from the upper deck to the lower deck, and I just remember these blood-curdling screams sent a chill down my spine and these paramedics rushing in. And I remember thinking, people, this is not life and or death. And just for a second, I thought, did some fan throw himself or herself off the top deck because we lost? And I don't think that was the case. I don't think someone was trying to kill themselves. I think somebody was drunk and they fell over. But yeah, so as I'm walking out with just the most horrifying feeling I've ever had in any of my home arenas, and then the blood-curdling screams and people running by, and that was one of the, I mean, it's sports, as I said, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's just a game. But at that moment, what a horrifying feeling. Not good, not as fun as some of the other moments. I remember Mark Jackson, when there was a lockout and he was hired and they had an event for the season ticket holders at the Coliseum. The media was invited as well. And I went with my former program director here, Jason Barrett, because he had known Mark Jackson for their time from ESPN. So he introduced me to him. And that's when I actually, the only time in my life I really talked to Joe Lacob, and he said, why do I know your name? I go, 95.7. And he said, I think I've heard you one time, which was an interesting thing to say. But anyway, he's a nice guy. And but I remember Mark Jackson, you know, they could have no contact with the players. They were locked out. And so Mark Jackson came out on the court with a mic, and it was like one side of the lower bowl was with these season ticket holders who were invited to come in. And he said, we're going to do something here that hasn't been done in a long time. We're going to play defense. So I want all of you to repeat after me. Defense. And then the season ticket holders. Defense. It was really weird, but it was also kind of cool. You had the crowd chanting, defense, defense. And there are no players. The lights are out. It was weird, but I'll tell you what. As weird and dysfunctional as Mark Jackson was, he was the first coach in Warriors history since Al Attles to have the Warriors play defense. Nelly's team didn't play a lot outside of Mitch Richmond, maybe a little Larry Smith hardware. But still, Mark Jackson got them to play defense. And he fired two assistant coaches. And he, you know, the one guy was recording coach meetings. Remember, coach, what did you say about our upcoming game? And can you talk into this carnation on my lapel clearly? And could you enunciate? He had, I remember after Warrior Game, he was a minister. He had a religious, what do you want to call it? Ceremony, mass, whatever it was. He had a religious gathering of his followers. They went there. Don Nelson got married right there on the hardwood to Miss Joy. Remember, that's what he always called her, Miss Joy. They got married at the Coliseum. A lot of things have gone down there. All right, we'll talk about it more. I got more memories. You got any more Troutwig stories? No, I don't have any more of those. We're going to talk a little baseball on the other side. We're going to bring in Jessica Kleinschmidt from NBC Sports. We'll do that next. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back. 95.7 again.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
Now batting number 22, Josh Reddick.
Rick Tittle with you, 95.7 The Game. Thank you so much for that. Thanks for joining us on a Sunday morning. Take you all up until noon. Who's at noon? Herbs? 57 Herbs and Spices? I think so. We'll have Michael Urban in, and he will continue on. That'll lead you up to our live coverage of the Warriors' last regular season game at the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum Arena, which is, of course, sponsored by Oracle in these last years now during these this Warriors' dynastic time. Talking about memories, been doing that here the first hour 18. But let's talk a little bit about the boys of summer. It's spring. They are underway. And let's bring in our friend Jessica Kleinschmidt. She is from NBC Sports Bay Area. And Jessica, the Giants opener, I thought it was my favorite moment was Bruce Bochy, nearly 2 minutes, getting an ovation. And about 15 seconds in, he had enough. You know, he doesn't like the attention. So he was tipping the hat and kind of clapping. But that's what makes the guy, one of the reasons anyway, which makes him so great, is he doesn't like to be feted and had rose petals thrown at his feet. He just wants to play baseball.
Yeah, it was actually, like you said, after 15 seconds, you were almost kind of awkward for him because you knew he didn't want to be out there. I made that joke. The guy who does not want to celebrate Bruce Bochy right now is Bruce Bochy. And you're right. He's not that kind of guy. And it's, even being around him, like, I had this fun story around spring training where I made him laugh and it was just so not Bruce, but it's kind of nice to get that out of him every now and then. But, you know, he received a warm welcome and he was ready just to get into the game. But I'm not going to lie, a little bit into it, I kind of was like, when is this going to end? Because you can tell he wasn't really up for it. But later on, he said it was a very emotional deal for him and he was so thankful for it. But it was a very Bruce Bochy-esque moment, which was cool.
Yesterday, drawing just over 31,000 fans, mm-hmm. which normally would be a great, but for the Giants, they're used to more like, you know, 38, 39, 40. Uh-huh. Are we looking, and I know it's, you know, kids are in school, people were scared off by the forecasts of showers and things, but are we looking at maybe a kind of a lost summer here where the reload, if you want, is going to take some time to get the fans to part with their hard-earned cash?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a while. I mean, it was a very unique off season. A lot of moves were made, but it was very Jerry DePoto-esque type of moves. You weren't really sure what they meant, especially at one point the Giants had like 87 catchers on the team, all at the age of 87, it seemed like. And I don't know. And like you said, I'm growing up an A's fan. If that amount of people showed up to an A's game, that'd be dope. But that didn't happen with the Giants. So it's very worrisome. And of course, I think the first game left a huge bad, like a really bad taste in a lot of fans' mouths. You did mention the forecast and of course the kids and stuff like that. And it wasn't the home opener necessarily to where you could say like, hey, let's take the day off this day after. So I could put that into account. But watching as the Giants over the years, definitely something to keep an eye on because it's not something that Giants fans are used to.
No, and I was telling people, knowing that, you know, Farhan got his start with Billy Bean, to expect a lot of Billy Bean-esque moves, you know, a lot of cheap guys, a lot of old mm-hmm. guys, give him a chance. I mean, think about the Michael Reed experiment. We're going to be in September and we're going to say, do you remember when Michael Reed was starting in like the opening series? And you'd be like, who? Like, oh yeah, I think I remember that guy. He played like 3 games for us.
forever giant, that Michael Reed. Yeah, but he started off really rough, but so did Connor Joe. And I felt like it was kind of weird. Do you take a gamble on the guy like Michael Reed, who was he has very solid numbers in minor leagues, and so did Connor Joe. But even Connor Joe, like, he waited forever, and he finally got his first major league hit just yesterday. So that was kind of interesting. But that situation alone was weird. You know, he was gone, and he was back, and then he was gone, and he was back, and it was kind of interesting in that dynamic. But I think he's going to be successful. I just don't see him being successful with the Giants. I think he needs, like, a hitter's park and a place where he can kind of start his roots really well. But he's a big question mark to me, but there's definitely potential there.
Well, I mean, you think about all the money they gave Mark Melancon, and I thought that was a good investment at the time. I think about that series with the Cubs. Had they had a guy like Melancon, I thought maybe the Cubs are still talking about their curse of the goat. But now you look at three wins, and all three are Will Smith saves. So it's, as I said, it's April. We don't want to draw any conclusions, but they have a closer, Jessica?
Yeah, well, I mean, Will Smith was one of the main guys they were talking about with being on the trade block because of the fact that he's very successful. But, you know, it's one of those weird type of scenarios where the bullpen's getting a lot of attention, which is great, but you don't want to push everything toward that bullpen because they end up getting tired. And, you know, we saw it with the A's with Blake Treinen, and then it turns out to a situation where they're starting. I don't want to push that either, but you don't really, this is weird. You saw what the Rays were doing, so you don't really know. But I love Will Smith. I think he's the best guy on that pitching staff. Or at least one of them, I should say. I think Derek Rodriguez had a really bad second outing that kind of took away from what he could be doing. Velocity was definitely up during spring training. But yeah, I think, you know, you're putting it all on Will Smith, but that's what's kind of bad. You can't put it all on one person, obviously, as the season goes by. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm hoping nothing bad happens to where he's on the trading block and it's even worse, you know, but never know.
Yeah. Well, and you know, as I said, and, you know, we've got basically 9-10 games for all these teams now, and it's April. We don't even want to even look at what happens in April or May. You know, it's like June we start. But on the other hand, let's do it anyway, because this is what we have.
And I guess I've been covering the sport for so long. I don't know what date I feel comfortable saying this is too soon in the season. I don't know if you're biased at certain teams. You know, oh, it's so young. Like even the Red Sox, people are freaking out. Orioles are 500 right now. Are we actually saying that's good? A's had a good hot start. Giants are struggling. So it's always difficult for me every single year to say this is the date where I feel like we need to stop saying it's early in the season.
Well, the Red Sox had their greatest team ever last year,
yeah.
And now they're off to their worst start ever.
Right.
So draw the conclusions you want. But this is what I ask you. You look at the Dodgers, they're in first place, and you go, okay, they're good. Milwaukee's in first place, okay, they're good. But you mentioned DePoto. Seattle, this was supposed to be a rebuilding year. They're 8-2. Are they real?
Yes and no. I think from a strictly personal, I didn't think the Mariners were going to be good. Mainly because when you have your predictions, just as a baseball analyst, you want to be correct. And, in that case, I wasn't. So I'm like kind of, you know, eating my own words, but they have a very successful team and all the ingredients it takes. Like I'm the biggest Mitch Haniger fan in the world, but at the same time, for them, I think they could be real. I don't know if they're going to dominate the AL West necessarily. I think Houston still has time to show off what they're going to be. But at the same time, I think they're going to make it interesting. I don't think the Angels are going to be very successful. I think the A's are going to continue to be that scrappy team. But I think, if anything, the Mariners are going to be that wild card team to kind of spice things up or make it difficult for the rest of the division. But I don't see them taking the AL West.
I was at Banner Island for their opening night the other night and saw Chris Bassitt, 9 up, 9 down. Of course, he's playing against Cal League players.
Yeah.
You think about other guys on the mend, the Pucks, Losardos.
Yeah.
Cotton's on the mend, but his ERA career is over 5. There's a lot of options there. I still cannot believe that not only is Aaron Brooks still in professional baseball, but he's in the rotation. Like, I never even thought Montas would be in the rotation, and he's the 4 guy, and yet they had, like, 30 innings of one earned run. I can't see this rotation lasting. I think they're at 500, and the A's are just going to have to outscore other teams. But, as I said, the beginning of the year, it hasn't been that way. What do you think so far?
they're not hitting the ball, and that really worries me. I don't want to put it all on Matt Olson, but he kind of electrified that lineup, right? He, you know, put all the balls in play, and they got shut out last night. And obviously, you're not going to score any runs if you're not getting on base. And Chris Davis can only hit so many one-run bombs. You know, that's not going to dominate it. It's not like you're the Yankees. You have Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, and a healthy D.D. Gregorius. You're going to hit three runs every single at bat. It's not going to happen. And that pitching rotation, like you mentioned, Aaron Brooks, yeah, he's a great surprise. But we still have A.J. Puck, who I went from hearing his ETA is the middle of this season to not until 2020. So you don't know what the hell does that mean? Are you going to be here tomorrow or 3 years from now? You know, it's kind of annoying. And then we have all these, you mentioned the other, you know, injured pitchers. And even when Chris Bassitt returns, he's a really good pitcher, but he's so hard on himself mentally. I worry about him from just a mental standpoint. And if he doesn't have one good outing, I really worry about him, his attitude wise. But it's a very interesting rotation. Not one pitcher is awful. Brett Anderson he's been weirdly successful. And he's, you know, kind of returning to that rotation. But like you said, it's good for now. It's interesting, but as long as the pitching stays where it's at, that's great. But if they're not going to be hitting the ball, getting guys on base, what's the point?
Yeah, the Manaea thing is a huge loss. We know Caprellian had a setback as well. And Holmes was a first-round pick of the Dodgers. We'll see what happens. Anyway, there's some guys in the pipeline. We're speaking with Jessica Kleinschmidt, NBC Sports. A couple more questions here about baseball. When I was doing my preseason picks, as I always do, I found that the National League East was the hardest one, outside of the Marlins being in last, upon which we can all agree. You really could say any of the other four could win the division. And I went for the Philly hype. And I think about, you know, not just Harper, but Segura and Robertson and McCutcheon and Real Muto.
Yeah.
I mean, the Mets have pitching. Atlanta's got the young stars. Washington spends so much cash, and they got Scherzer and Strasburg. I still think Philly is going to find their way through. How did you prognosticate the NL East?
Well, even before we knew that Bryce Harper had a chance of going to Philly, I wasn't banking on him dominating and changing an entire baseball team with wins and losses necessarily. I think he would have been just like more of a pop culture ad, but he's certainly, you know, obviously putting, but I'm a huge Rhys Hoskins girl. I think he's phenomenal and he's just getting started. He definitely adds that. And of course, McCutcheon, when he's healthy and he's coming through clutch, that's great. But the Mets are obviously going to be the biggest surprise. But they made a lot of moves in the offseason that people kind of forgot about, and they're kind of working out to their advantage. And the Braves are always, like you mentioned, the Braves, they have a lot of talent that people, young talent especially, and Ender and Ciarte is always kind of the guy that comes through clutch and just roams that outfield and he can hit the crap out of the ball. And watching him play has been such a pleasure over the years. But I was never really surprised the NL East was going to be good. The NL actually all last year was just kind of even keeled, and it kind of was annoying just from the NL East alone because there wasn't one fantastic team that stood out. They were all kind of level across the board, so I was kind of concerned that was going to happen again because the AL was so easy to predict. There was, you know, obviously the Red Sox and the huge chunk of the people below them, but it doesn't really surprise me that much. Like you mentioned, the Marlins and stuff, but I'm not too surprised. It's a very successful division, and the Nationals obviously have a very, very successful pitching rotation, and they're always going to be kind of, you know, in the loop, if you will. And when they're playing to the best of their ability, they'll give any team a run for their money. So I love that division. It's definitely a tough one. I just worry that it becomes too even keeled. And if they're in a different division, it could be different. But I'm not surprised about how talented that group of teams is.
Rhys Hoskins, maybe the most Welsh name I've ever heard, of course, Jesuit High and Sac State Hornet. Yeah, is a kind of local boy that we root for. One trade deadline this year. No more, you know, who got put on waivers, who got pulled back, none of that stuff. It's July 31st, and that's it. And so with that second wild card, teams are going to have to make a decision whether they're in it and they're out. We saw a couple years ago with the Twins. We're out. I mean, we're in. I mean, we're out. They did that in a week. One of the number one names for July 31st is going to be Madison Bumgarner, because if the Giants continue what they're doing, and why wouldn't they continue to be a fourth place, third place team at best, they will deal him. And so that is going to be one of the big names. Do you think maybe they pull the trigger early on a June trade? Because we don't see many June trades. I think with this new rule, we'll see a lot more activity in June, Jessica.
I agree. And I feel like we all had to go through the free agency, and we're still waiting for a couple guys to get signed. It's ridiculous. And I don't know if that's going to upset players more or light a fire underneath some of the front office guys more or girls. And I'm hoping it does, because it's just June's kind of an interesting month. Enough time's gone by where you can say these guys or this team's going to be successful, but he's for sure going to be getting dealt. It's just weird talking to him about it, because he's very obviously going to be hush hush. He loves playing for the Giants, but I don't know if he's saying that to kind of calm us down in the media, because we don't know the Giants really without Madison Bumgarner, and to take him away would just be such a weird look for that team, and also show like they mean business. But at the same time, the way that he's approaching it, he said, I don't want to talk about it too much, but so does Farhan Zaidi. But he's one of the biggest names on across the game that could be a good trade block. And he's definitely going to be, conversations are going to be had. And of course you have somebody like Farhan Zaidi, who's not afraid to deal these guys. The sky's the limit, but I wouldn't be surprised if something happened to him well before the trade deadline.
You know, it's interesting what the Padres were able to do. I mean, just going back to when AJ Preller came in from Dallas and he said, we're going to matter. And he traded away the Trey Turners of the world and brings in Big Game James and Matt Kemp and these guys, Myers, we're going to win now. And then halfway through the season, he's like, never mind, let's trade everybody away. And then he almost gets kicked out of baseball and gets suspended.
Right.
But unlike the Marlins, who traded everybody away and still have a garbage farm system, the Padres started selling off pieces, and they have a fantastic farm system. Yeah. And we're already, I mean, they started the clock on Fernando Tatis Jr. They got Mejia from the Indians for Hand. This kid, Chris Paddock, who was acquired also from the Miami Marlins. You know, we kind of thought for both Harper and Machado, get them now. We're not going to win now, but get them now because you have to get them now and build around them. Should we take the Padres seriously this year? Because we kind of thought it'll take a few years.
I think you should, only because of how, I don't want to say non-competitive that NL West division is, obviously minus the Dodgers. Any other season, you have the Rockies, who obviously dominate at home. The Giants are always going to be good up until like last season. The Diamondbacks are always a team you have to mess with, but this year they're not good. They don't have Paul Goldschmidt. Don't get me wrong, I think Christian Walker has a lot of potential, but how do you replace Paul Goldschmidt? You don't. So any other season, I think it'd be a little bit more, like it will be less to pay attention to them. But this season, I think they're for real. I think they're not, I don't think they're going to be World Series champions by any means, but they're definitely going to make the NL West title interesting. If anything, they're going to be that annoying team to kind of screw it up for everyone if the Rockies, you know, kind of become the team that they're supposed to be. But I would definitely not take them lightly. You mentioned that farm system, and growing up in Reno, watching those guys play in the PCL and transition from the PCL, which was a very difficult thing to do as far as offensively goes, has been wonderful. So I think they're going to be something to kind of freak out a lot of NL teams.
Were you Reno, Reed, Wooster, Bishop, Minogue? What were you?
I was a North Valley's girl.
Ah, there it is. All right.
one of the brand new ones, yeah.
All right, one more question for you. Just philosophically, because Jorge Polanco had the first cycle of the year of the Twins. That was Friday night against the Phils. And I bring it up because our mutual friend Vince Catronio, he was the first guy I ever heard to say, what's the big deal? He got a single and a double and a triple and a home run. Why is that special? And I never thought about it that way. I always thought, hey, that's awesome. And now Vince makes me question it. What do you think about MLB cycles?
They're cute. That's pretty much what it is. I think they're very hard to do, and they're unique, especially getting a triple. But like, that's kind of what it comes down to. And they're cute, they're unique, they're different. But I don't think that there should be like, oh, he hit the most cycles. I don't really think that should be a record necessarily, unless it's like an outrageous number. Then it's like, that's really rare to do. I think just like I said, getting a triple is difficult, but that's pretty much where it comes down for me. I used to be way more cutesy-pootsy about it, but now I'm like, oh, that's whatever. I'd rather them like hit an in-the-park home run rather than a cycle.
It's passé. It's so 19.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when maybe like a few years back, I would get pumped for it. But now it's like, okay, cool. Let's move on.
What's the new cycle then? The opener going three?
Ooh. The new cycle. I don't know. I guess. Man, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know something that's as unique as that.
All right. We have been speaking to Miss Baseball herself, Jessica Kleinschmidt. Follow her on Twitter at Kleinschmidt, JD, and you can see her, NBC Sports Bay Area, and read her over there on the website as well. Jessica, thanks for your time and your insights, as always, and we'll talk ball soon.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
All right. By the way, the phone lines are open to all the – I've never really been a big guy who says seam head. I'm like, wait, is that a baseball? Baseball seams. Anyway, baseball fans, the lines are open at 888-957-9570, Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. I was at the Giants opener on Friday, and it stopped raining in time for them to get the game in, which was great. You know, it's funny, over the years, especially working in doing baseball games and TV for 10 years, is you get these reports on storms, and they don't happen. The worst in the world is an iPhone. You're better off literally just looking up like a chicken than looking at your iPhone, which is always wrong. I think it's some sort of dastardly ploy by the man to screw you to take an umbrella when you don't need it and vice versa. Remember at the Coliseum, the juxtaposition of Nerd Night for Sogard. They handed out plastic glasses with no lenses, and then we had a rain out with no rain because they forgot to put down the tarp. And it had rained the night before, so it's perfectly dry. And I just remember there was a little baby bulldozer, like, digging in at shortstop. And I thought, they're not playing a game with that thing digging around. And then Dick Callahan, tonight's game has been postponed. And I remember at that point, Troy Clarity was doing pre and post. And I was in the press box. He's like, Rick, do a couple segments with me. It's like, I got you. All of a sudden, you have a five-hour solo show. But at, you know, the people saying it at the Giants. You know, there was talk of, oh, they might cancel it. I'm like, no, they don't. You don't get baseball. Baseball people don't call off games like that, especially an American League team on the East Coast who is not coming back in the Tampa Bay Rays. They will get that game in. They'll do everything they can. They'll wait 3 hours. But it was great weather. It was very nice. And as I said, Bruce Bochy, nearly 2 minutes of an ovation. Really cool. Some people said, oh my gosh, Larry Bear was in one of the videos. He was in the Peter McGowan tribute video, which had been produced before all that went down. So obviously if he was complete persona non grata, maybe they would edit that out, but that had done before. It was cool to see Kruk go out, and we know Kruk has some issues with his health and he had a cane, and it just reminds us, you know, time is going on, but it was good to see Kruk out there, and it's hard to believe it's the 20th opener. I was there. I remember. I think the only time in my life I sold tickets, because I bought four to the first ever game there, and then I sold two, which paid for those two. And I thought it would be cool to take my dad, so I went with my dad. And I remember the flyover was like this guppy, like this Hercules, like C-130, whatever it was. Or a stealth bomber. I forgot what it was. Someone in the Air Force will correct me. But it went like maybe it cleared the light standards by 5 inches. Just this enormous lumbering plane went over. And then Kevin Elster hit 3 home runs for the Dodgers. And I remember Dwayne Kuiper saying, oh no, what kind of ridiculous bandbox do we have on our hands when Kevin Elster's hitting? They thought there would be like 9 home runs at every game. I do remember after the Dodgers swept the Giants, that Dusty Baker, by the way, who I love, he's a great guy, but he said something that I don't really agree with. He said, we don't know how to play here yet. Now, what he meant was, we don't know the caroms, especially in right field. You can have a ball hit and die or go the other direction. I was there for Ichiro's inside the park home run. I know the weird bounces it could take. Triples alley, which is sucks up a lot of home runs. But my only answer to that was, well, the Dodgers certainly know how to play there. There's also the irony of a Tampa Bay team in there when Bob Lurie sold the team to Tampa St. Pete before Bill White stepped in and said, give a chance for local ownership. But also, when I worked in TV, I knew in the 90s, I got to know Doug Greenwald, Hank Greenwald's son, and over the last 20 years, I don't see him that much anymore, but, I remember, you know, the times I got to talk to Hank and going to a party one time at Hank Greenwald's house with a lot of baseball people. It was really cool. So it was very sad when he died. I went to the little memorial thing at Perry's, which was packed with people. Just about everybody in the Bay Area media was there to pay their tributes to Hank. But was in the press box. Doug was standing next to me, and there's Carla, and she kind of leaned over right next to me as we looked, and there he is up on the screen. They had had kind of like a Hollywood in memoriam, and just really a lot of sad, a lot of ticket takers and people who worked for Bon Appetit and security and other things. And then, you know, the carnage of these big names, Hank Greenwald. I'm sure that was a hard moment for the Greenwalds to look and see their beloved husband and father up there and the fans. And then, you know, you get Frank Robinson, you get Peter McGowan, and then you get Willie McCovey. I mean, man, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. But, you know, and then Derek Rodriguez goes out there and gives up four runs. And then it kind of brought us all back to reality. All right, I'm Rick Tittle. We'll talk, get back to the Coliseum Arena moments. We'd love to hear from you. 888-957-9570. And the Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on 95.7 The Game. Wow.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
You don't even give me the real version. You give me the elevator music version. Don't go breaking my heart. Elton John. The immortal Kiki D. She was great, wasn't she? All right, not really. Rick Tittle with you on a Sunday morning. Did you just wake up? You hitting that snoozer? That's right, hit it again. 9:48. I'll be with you until noon. At that point, Michael Urban will sashay, saunter, amble, and waltz his way in and sit down at this microphone. Coming up, Dieter Kotzenbach, heute. At 10:20, and then Tim Roy, Warriors Vox, voice of the Warriors, he will join us. Looking forward to talking to Tim at 11:20. It is the last regular season game, the history of the Golden State Warriors in Oakland, California, at the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum Arena, which is the last few years sponsored by Oracle, which we have embrace the name of the Oracle Arena by saying Roracle because of the great times we've had there. And would love to know some of your memories at 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570, ChiltonAutoBody.com text line. Once again, Chilton Auto Body text line. You can get there at 95795. And I talked about already some of the things there, bull riding, tennis, of course, the great Warrior moments, the Sleepy Floyd game, which when he went crazy in that, what was it, the third quarter. And I remember watching that game. I wasn't at that game. I was watching the game on TV with my dad and my older brother, and we were just over the moon. That was the only game the Warriors won that playoff series, but you know, you think about George Karl getting the team to the playoffs. It had been a 10-year gap of no playoffs. Remember after that, until the Warriors got with Mark Jackson, it was a 13-year gap. It was horrifying. But we, you think about that win. We really hung our hat on that win. Can you imagine that? One game. You beat the Lakers one game after getting past Utah, but one game. We were just so excited just to have it. Taste of just a bit of honey. You know, we never ever and you know, it's funny, I tell people all the time that growing up around here, when the playoffs started, everyone's like, the Warriors are my regular season team, the Lakers are a playoff team. And then the text line, people say, no way, no one says that. Thank you, Mark Spears. He just said the exact same thing earlier. It's exactly what a lot of people did. I remember asking a guy, I go, I despise the Lakers. I always will despise the Lakers. Right now I have great warm cockles of schadenfreude that the Lakers suck. Believe me, I love it.
Not five, not six, not seven.
That was the Heat. Same guy, though. But the so many people are like, well, you know, I want to watch the playoffs. I want to root for somebody, and I love Magic. Okay, let's go ahead. Free country, love whoever you want. But, man, I hated them. So to beat them in a playoff game was absolutely amazing. That was our perspective. But it's funny, Mark Spears was talking about his first interview down in San Jose. He was doing a little event with Run TMC. The first time I ever got to a Warrior press conference was in 1985. I was the editor of my college sports section of our newspaper. I fancied myself as a writer. Is it all right? Sorry, can't do that at all. So I thought I was hoping to be a sports writer. And the Warriors had, in 1985, their first ever, they called it College Newspaper Night. And it's the closest I've ever sat to the court in my life for an NBA game. They put us in the third row. It was amazing. And there was about maybe, I don't know, eight of us from the local college papers. It was probably Clara and Cal, Stanford, whatever, San Francisco State. And I was there from St. Mary's. And I remember they said after the game, and the Warriors, of course, stunk. The year before, they were the worst team in basketball. We were all excited to get Ewing. They got screwed because they wanted Ewing to go to the Knicks. And speaking of, Al Addles was going to the Hall of Fame. They pulled the first card out, and Al went, yeah, no, Al, that means you pick last. I mean, it was all screwed. But they ended up with a guy named Chris Mullin. And we were supposed to do our first ever interview. It was a big deal, and ask questions of an NBA star, and it was going to be Greg Ballard. And we were like, all right, well, I mean, that's better than talking to a college guy. Let's talk to Greg Ballard. He's a small forward back in the day. And they said, Ballard can't make it. Is it okay if we bring in Chris Mullin, who's on the injured list? And we're like, yeah, we'd much rather talk to him. And so Mully came in on crutches. And that was back when he still had the Ditka orange hair. And, you know, the Irish bars out on Geary, the Abbey Tavern, what have you. This is before he turned his life around. You know, a lot of times guys, they say, you know what, I'm turning my life around. I'm shaving my head. I'm getting a Sergeant Carter, high and tight, Paris Island, and I'm getting on the straight and narrow. Man, Chris Mullin, I have nothing but admiration for him. That's what he did. He goes, I don't want to walk around drunk. I'm gonna get this haircut and get on the straight and narrow. And he's been on it ever since, and he's in the Hall of Fame and has a gold medal. I mean, I have nothing but admiration. But this is, he was brand new and he was hurt. And my question to him was, do you ever get homesick? And he said, I used to, not anymore. That was the answer. I can't really do his voice. It's always deep. But that was a huge thrill to go into the Coliseum and like be like a media guy. Very, very cool. I went to some circuses there. I remember my heart in my throat. There were these tightrope walkers from Spain, and they refused to have a net. And there were some guys that were up there. I don't know. They had to be at least 60 feet in the air, 80 feet, whatever it was. And I hated every second of it because I didn't want to watch a human being plummet to his or her death. And they're like, we're so good, we don't need a net. And they're out there, you know, like the Willendes holding the pole. Let me get my center of gravity. Yeah.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.